Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. Eddie Pence is out doing a show. He's been gigging a lot lately. But we're going to jump right into this interview. I think our special guest has arrived. Natalie, I don't want to butcher your last name, so why don't you introduce yourself so I don't mess up your last name. Natalie, and you say the last name.
Bonat.
See, I knew. I was like, don't mess that up. I should have asked you. I asked you your first name, but I didn't ask you your second name.
Right.
But our studio audience wants to say hello. Oh, we like you already. So we're going to jump right in. You were born in San Francisco.
Yes.
But you grew up in Montreal.
Exactly.
And how did you get into music? You play the violin. You compose. We're going to talk about so much. But how did you get into music? How old were you when you first started? Give us the 411.
Well, I was four, and my mom just took me to this concert, this kids' concert, final annual concert, and I was there fascinated by these kids playing pieces, and I was like, oh my God, this is so nice, I just wish I could play with them, and so that's how I started. So she just put me in that situation, and I felt the urge of trying that out, and I've been playing ever since.
Do you remember the first piece you learned?
Oh my God, it's called A vous dirais-je maman in French, but it is actually Twinkle Twinkle.
Oh, that's sweet. They start with the basics in all countries.
In all countries.
Violin's a hard instrument for your parents to listen to in the very beginning. So a big shout out to your folks because that is patience beyond measure. I feel like violin and drums are the two that in the first couple of years, it's like, oh my God, it's painful, no matter how good you are when you start, you know?
Definitely. It's painful.
And did you play in like an orchestra? That must have been too early for you to play.
This was kind of a group class school, type of school. So the first 3 years, we basically were in groups of maybe four or five. So it wasn't like an ensemble where we play different parts, but we were playing all the same parts, trying to play them in tune and together. And then finding a good pitch average.
Right. That's the hard part with the violin, too.
It is. So we started with little markers and to make sure that, you know, we put the fingers in the right place. And sometimes those markers kind of get off. Because
of course. Of course.
Because
you were practicing so much.
Well, it was 15 minutes a day. That was pretty much what, you know, at 4 years old, that's pretty much the max that you can
do. That's amazing.
And doing that every day. So, I mean, it's just to have that habit and have fun with it, you know, basically try to.
And did you have music in the house? Like, were your parents playing records? Was your mom big on classical music?
They're both really big on classical music. So I grew up listening to that. So I guess that already trained my ear. I honestly did not listen to pop music until I was a teenager. It was just not in the house.
That's usually when it starts. I actually studied classical music too. So I was singing operas and doing all of that at a really young age. So I was the same. As soon as I got into, like, my teenage years, that's when I started listening to pop. And I still feel like I'm catching up. Like, I just don't know enough about it.
Exactly.
Because it's just, I feel like so much of my life wasn't about it for so long, you know?
I discovered Bon Jovi, and I was like, what?
You're like, this is living right here.
You too, right?
That's right. Two of my favorite bands. They're great.
There you go.
Legendary.
Yeah.
So did you ever play anything outside of classical when you were getting into that music?
Yeah. The first piece I played was, I think it was called, I can't remember the piece. But it was like an arrangement, a pop arrangement. And I was 14. And it was cool because it was actually Marie Bernard. She's a composer from home. And so we played her piece. And It was so cool. And then we played the Queen's arrangement with a choir in a church, you know, with That's all incredible. The lights, you know, going yeah. up. It was like a major, you know, discovery. So I started doing a lot of pop and then sessions with different groups or different pop stars. And then I started doing more combination of classical and pop and rock and, you know, playing with Tea Party, stuff like that. So I definitely had a lot of new experiences. I would say around 14 to 17 was the discovery part of me being able to perform in right. other styles than classical.
And did you know then that this is what you wanted to do, or are you just having fun and just experimenting and learning about it?
You mean music in general? Yeah. Or, well, I had my doubts. Like, when I was 9, I stopped completely for the whole summer. Basically, I wanted to be a gymnast. I was doing gymnastics before music since I was 3.
Wow.
So
your parents were like, you're going to be a star of some kind.
No, I was intense. So I did a lot of gymnastics and then music. And when I was 9, I got refused from the you know, gymnastics club. That was basically my only entry point for anything higher than that. And that was like major depression. Anyway, so that summer I just stopped.
Their loss, right? Yeah, their loss.
I mean, you know, I didn't fit their height and weight and whatever. But so I stopped that summer. I just needed to play with friends and have fun. And then I just took it back by myself. And that was a signal that it was important right. to me. And then again at 14, I had this little doubt period, probably because of Bon Jovi and YouTube. I don't know.
You're like, I don't want to be this straight and narrow.
Oh, my God. Oh, I even remember that I wanted to put nail polish in my
polish. There you go. Rock and roll.
I can't play violin with nail polish. That's it.
Right? You're like, that's it. I'm done. You know, I cannot do it.
You know, 14 kind of thing. But, yeah, I think I always started back. It just... Every time there was this profound need for music in me, and I just needed to go back to it.
Was there a particular composer that you just fell in love with every time you played something by them? You just fell into the music.
I was depending on, I guess, the period of life. Because the beginning, I was listening to so much classical music that my favorite classical composer was Brahms, and then
Mahler. That's the romantic period.
I am a romantic. So Brahms and Mahler were kind of my favorite ones when I was 17. I actually spent 4 years in New York during those years. I would say even a little earlier, from 11 to 14, and I was playing in the New York Youth Symphony with David wow. Allen Miller, who's now wow. He's now conductor of the Albany Symphony. And I discovered so much, from Tchaikovsky to, you know, Elgar, and even contemporary pieces. And it was so great, because we would perform in Carnegie Hall 3 times
wow.
a year.
Wow.
How great is that when you're
12? Wait, how old are you? I did that when I was 10. High five.
Hey,
I only did it once, though. I didn't do it 3 times. Right. I mean, you're tripling my highs from that experience.
Oh, yes. It was so amazing. I remember the first time I walked on that stage, and I had to come on stage a little early to just play my violin alone. I was 12 and just hear the sound. I was just...
That's awesome.
It was great, yeah.
I sang in a choir. It was like a bunch of choirs, and I still remember what it looked like. Mm-hmm. It was such a vivid memory. But the crazy thing is, Carnegie Hall didn't come to life for me until I realized all the people that I loved that played it, like Stevie Ray Vaughan, who's one of my favorite rock yeah. blues musicians. He played it. So, I mean, so many masters of their craft have gone mm-hmm. through there. So then it just came to life for me
right.
then.
Yes.
Because I think I was like, oh, yeah, Carnegie Hall, you know, we're just a bunch of kids playing in this great, you know, it's a legendary place. Yeah. But then you see the lineage of the people that have gone
right.
through there as you get older, and you realize, oh, my God. That was like an insane experience, you know?
So yes. It's like a cathedral of music.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
And the acoustics, I still remember the way it sounded.
Yes.
So how many times did you play there?
Well, it was two concerts each time, so probably about 6 times a year for 4 years.
That is crazy. Uh-huh. So now it's all news to you. You're like, oh, that Carnegie Hall place. That's
we
such
went
a small
back
room.
And McGill, so, because I was also... I studied at McGill, and we went there with the orchestra, so... Yeah, I was really lucky to go there quite a few times.
And when did you grow up in San Francisco? When did you make that? You grew up in San Francisco, and then you went to Montreal, and then did you ever come back to San Francisco?
I only was there for a year and a half, because
okay.
my father was doing a doctorate in psychology, and
wow.
I was born during that time. So they moved back to Montreal. I was 1.5.
And they're still there?
They're still in Montreal.
That's awesome.
But... So, yes, I only was 1.5, but I got dual citizenship because of that, and that really was helpful and is still very helpful today for numerous contracts and,
yeah.
and projects. So I only went back twice since then.
So you can hop the border freely.
I can.
You know, we've got a lot of parallels because I was born in St. John's, Newfoundland. I'm a Newfie.
Oh.
So I'm actually going through the dual citizenship stuff right now just to prove, you know, that I was born there and all that. They're pretty strict about it. But, yeah, so it's crazy. That's so nuts.
It is, right?
Okay, so you went to Montreal. Now, were you influenced by a lot of the jazz? There's the Montreal Jazz Festival. There's so much of, you know, Cirque du Soleil, I think, was born there, correct?
Yes, I worked on quite a few album projects, I would say. I was not a performer on shows, but I worked on a lot of their CDs and soundtracks. And jazz, this jazz scene. Yes, I did play a lot at the jazz festival and actually got involved in jazz because when I was 21, I was going out with a medical doctor, and this kind of threw
smart.
Well, yes, and it also challenged what I wanted to do in life because I felt so useless compared to him saving lives every day. And I was like practicing hours a day on this little stupid passage to get this one note right, and I was thinking, this is so useless.
That's because he was like, I'm saving lives. What are you doing with your time?
I know, right?
Saving lives too, whether you believe it or not.
Well,
trust
I figured that out later, but I had to go through a big detour, which was my third time where I sort of took a very major step back from music. I actually went into pre-med and got accepted in med school.
Wow.
Because that was, I don't know, I just felt like I needed to be more useful to humanity. And so I got accepted in med school, and then I had this huge choice to make when I was 23. And I just remember, you know, writing to the university and saying, look, I need to think about this. They gave me a year to think about it.
Wow.
Yes, I can't.
That's cool.
I know, that is so cool, right? So, and it was so hard to get in.
Right.
At that time, it was like we needed crazy average and stuff. Anyway, so I took off to Italy for like a whole summer. And while I was there, I really discovered that I was made for music.
Yeah.
But I was not made for music the way I thought I was. And I needed to do something where I could have my own voice, express my own identity as an artist, and not just play in orchestras, even though I still love playing in orchestras. But I needed something else. So when I came back, I found this jazz fusion trio. I started listening to Jean-Luc Ponty and, you know, Mahavishnu and all these people and bands, Stanley Clark and Chick Corea. And I got involved in all these projects. And with this particular trio, I actually met Jean-Luc Ponty, who became kind of a big brother.
Mentor.
Well, yes, he didn't give me lessons per se, but he actually came to my gigs and gave me a lot of insight and suggestions. And then I started studying with Matt Glazer and Daryl Anger and Mark O'Connor and Julie Lyon Lieberman, and went to New York for these workshops through amazing grants from Canada and Quebec Council. Thank you very much.
Got to give that Canadian government shout-outs.
I know. They're really great for that. And that really got me involved in so many other projects that now I could have my own personality when I played, which, you know, got me through pop and rock tours as more of a solo electric violinist. And, you know, it was more fulfilling for me.
Well, let's play a track real quick because I know we're going to, you know, I don't want to run out of time without getting to some of the music you've composed. Composing's been a big part of your musical journey. Mm-hmm. So tell us real quick what you want us to play first and kind of what the inspiration was.
Okay, well, let's start, let's say, with Hero's Lament. It's a shorter piece, which actually showcases me as a violinist in the opening. And then this was more of an idea of a video game track that I made. I actually demoed it at the GDC last March in San Francisco. So, yeah, composing has been very important for the last 10 years, I would say. I got involved. And through Berklee Online, I finished my master's certificate in composition for film, TV, and did some game interactive courses as well and electronic production. So I've done a lot of TV shows in Montreal, a lot of main titles, and even the whole soundtrack, basically, of two seasons of this show that is still playing in Switzerland right now. So
that's awesome.
Pretty cool. Yes. So, well, let's play this track and then we can talk about it.
All right. Here's Hero's Lament.
¶¶
Yeah. Whoa, that was intense.
Yes, intense.
Adrenaline.
Adrenaline. Yeah.
That was actually really beautiful. I love the intro. I mean, man, your phrasing is very nice. How old's your violin? Or one of them? I'm sure you have many.
Actually, this is my youngest one.
Okay.
It's new. It's been built, made for me 2.5 years ago.
Wow.
From this Belgian woman, a violin maker who moved to Quebec. She won many prizes in Europe. And I actually fell in love with her instrument when my old violin, over 100 years old, an Italian violin, got cracked at one of the voice rehearsals. An unfortunate accident happened, and I had to go and have it repaired, and she lent me her violin. I was like, oh, my God.
Did you have to play with it cracked?
For the dress rehearsal, I did. I was kind of worried, but it wasn't the live show, and I was kind of careful about it. It wasn't opened completely, but yeah, so that was very scary.
Oh man, that's heartbreaking.
I know, it is dangerous,
but at least you got a new one.
At least I got a new one.
That's right. Yeah. And so what was the inspiration, or what was their vision to create this piece?
Well, it was based in my idea of kind of a, let's just say, an epic role-playing game, kind of like Assassin's Creed or something like that, you know, World of Warcraft kind of thing, where you would hear the hero's lament. Basically, that's the violin at the opening, this kind of tortured soul that needs to save the world, and then just kind of going off into the battle. And then,
well, it literally took me into that world. I mean, you kind of prefaced it with some of that, and then like I was in the piece in the intro, and then as soon as it started getting fast with, you know, all the subdivisions, I was like, oh man, this is okay. I'm gearing up to something. I was all of a sudden in a video game and just trying to just run for dear life. I mean, it makes you want to run, right?
Good.
It's good running music.
It is.
So, did you feel like you wanted to kind of soundscape an idea or a vision or a part of this? You know,
Every time I compose, I need to have some kind of idea or picture or story behind. I'm not one of those composers that can just write music for music's sake. Like,
right.
Maybe someday I will write a pure concert piece. Maybe. I don't know. I don't see myself writing just, let's say, a concerto or a symphony or something like that without having a story behind. And I'm curious, actually. Maybe they did. Like, maybe Beethoven had stories behind all his symphonies. But for me, it's very important. And so I think of that, like, for this piece was very clear, this kind of I don't know, forgotten king character, maybe, you know, like Aragorn, maybe, and you know, Lord of the Ring kind of thing, where he has to regain his title and fight for good. That was the inspiration behind this one.
And do you write it out, or do you compose, like you play it and then kind of work around that? What's your process?
It depends. Kind of every piece has its own process, but this one, I remember, I just fiddled around literally on that theme, and when I was happy with it.
Pun intended.
Yes, it was. We were lacking a drum here. But yeah, so I did just play with that, and I found the melody that I liked, and then took off from there and went on to the second part. But it's always kind of an improv at the beginning. I don't like to analyze it or plan it out too much.
Right.
Sometimes I do have to plan it a little bit because of what's going on and what's required, but I try to have my instincts lead me and to get that feeling, that raw feeling first, and then I kind of work more and refine it.
I like that you chisel.
I do.
You kind of like hone in on the final piece. I love that. I'm kind of like that too. I want to talk to you real quick because I was so excited when I read some parts of your bio. I saw that you recorded and have performed with Pavarotti, Stevie Wonder. Talk a little bit about that, because, you know, those are two crazy names to pair right next to each other. And they're two of my hugest influences in one way or another. So talk about that.
Those were live shows, actually. And the Pavarotti was one of his last show, I think, maybe the last 2 years of his life. And he performed at the Bell Center. So we were an orchestra that was, you know, put together for that show. It's so special to be there, and it's just his aura.
His voice is
magnificent.
Insane.
His
yes.
voice and his presence, and he can just hold the breath of a whole arena by his presence. It's magic. No, I don't know of anybody else that had that power.
I saw him sing twice, and I sang six operas with Placido Domingo, but Pavarotti was always my favorite. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like he just blew the other tenors out of the water. You know what I mean? So, man, I don't know if I would have been able to concentrate if I was in the orchestra listening to his voice, because you had to have moments where you're like, oh my God, how mm-hmm. am I just not stopping just to listen, right?
It's like epiphany, like yeah. right there. Yeah. You're like, what? Yes, it's like greater in the nature kind of thing. Yeah, it's,
do you remember the pieces you played? Did you play Nessun Dorma? Well, I mean,
O Salve Mio,
yes,
for sure.
Yes,
yes. Nessun Dorma, he did.
Did you do Bohème?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I know those two, he really, no, those
yeah, those. Are, he has to do those.
To be honest, he didn't sing that many. Like, there was a soprano, and I'm sorry, I don't remember her name, but she was singing kind of a piece or two between, because he was starting to get
old,
tired.
Yeah, right.
And all, yeah, he was a little ill, I think, or you know, not feeling so well. So he fatigued kind of fast. So he probably maybe sang 7 or 8.
That's still incredible.
Still, it is.
Wow.
Yes, it is. It's phenomenal. Just
and what about
there.
Stevie Wonder?
Stevie Wonder was doing his, oh my God, Key of Life.
Songs in the Key of Life?
Yes,
yeah.
Tour. And he was having kind of pickup string and some of other orchestral instruments from the cities where he was touring to get added to the main band. So we were there and I was, you know, very lucky and
that's
honored
crazy.
To be playing in the live string band.
I got to meet Stevie Wonder, but I've never played with him. I mean, that's on a whole nother level.
It was incredible. I mean, the show lasted 4.5 hours. He actually got bad critics because of it.
Really?
It was like too long for some people. And I was like, come on, you can't say that's
right.
too
it's
long.
Stevie Wonder. I mean, come Stevie on. Wonder. It should be 7 hours.
I
we should
know,
all love
right?
it.
I mean, you're lucky to just be there. You can just take off if you're not happy. But yes, and he just gave solos to like all his band members and very generous person. Again, you know, just the vibe that he has. He's just a kid that keeps playing. He learned this crazy kind of harp guitar. I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen him play it. He plays it with his fingers, it sounds like a harp and a guitar at the same time.
And it's amazing, like, how he can just play with that incredibly fast. And, so he's just, like, this amazing kid, talented kid that's just sharing his fun.
Like yourself. All right, let's get to another song of yours. Okay. What do you want to play?
How about Destiny Calling?
All right, tell us a little a backstory about this piece.
Well, this is also kind of game influenced, inspired, but I would say more of a sea kind of thing about sirens, but in a good way. Like, Destiny's calling you. I used my voice. I used my friend, who's a soprano. She did the high main voice of that, and we kind of, you know, peaks out a little bit certain areas. I did electric violin, electric baritone violin, which sounds like cello. So that's the low string, like, that you hear. You're thinking it's not electric guitar, but it's like, that's what it is. And it is also a very epic piece.
Awesome. I like it. All of these pieces have this epic theme to it. All right, here's Destiny Calling. nice. Thank you. Very beautiful.
And I really want to mention my friend MB Gordy, who just tracked those percussions, amazing percussions, last week in his studio.
What did you tell him? You were like, I need something that sounds jungle, symphony, video game, all in one.
I actually wrote out all the parts.
Wow.
Yes,
really?
I did. But then I said, look, this is the parts, but I want you to take off from there, especially like the djembe. He actually added that because I wanted a solo voice on there, and that's kind of hard to program when you're not a percussion, especially player.
I like that you did that. A lot of composers don't, they don't do that. Mm. You know, they don't give the players the room. I think it's important to give people that know their craft. It's like you can guide them and give them an idea, but then when they have something that they, you know it's going to fit more than you do, that's when it reaches new heights that you didn't think it was going to reach.
Yes, and I think in this case, like, I had enough of a good idea that was written on the score for him to know what I was looking for, and I attempted, you know, I mean, not attempted, but I did a mock-up of it too, so he could understand the vibe that I was wanted to for this piece. But then we explored different sounds, different instruments that I had never seen or heard of. And, you know, he's got a, like, Alibaba's, you know.
Of course.
So it was great because he really proposed a lot of really cool instruments that I don't even know all their names. And, of course, there are taikos and, you know.
Yeah. You know, I thought I heard an udu maybe in there. You could hear all kinds of, like, African instruments, some Latin instruments, South American instruments.
There's a trash can in there.
Really?
Yes.
That's awesome. See, how would he know that it just works? He must get pissed when people use, like, you know, just electronic percussion because it just never feels. I have a percussionist in my band, and there's a reason why I have percussion in my band, because drums are great, but percussion adds this other element drums just never will reach. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So there's something about, maybe it's because it's played with the hands, maybe it's because it's played with mallets, depending on what the instrument
is. It's the feel. You know, it just adds so much. You can't quantize or even add a groove that will ever feel like a real percussion.
You are a musician's musician.
Yes,
that is
definitely
awesome. That is awesome.
Yes.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the other pieces that you got, because you are working on all kinds of works, and are you wanting, like, movie screening, like, projects? Do you, like, what's your ideal vision in music? You just moved here recently.
Yes, I'm still very new in town. I mean, I've been coming back and forth for 2 years. My plan was to move here this year. So I stuck to the plan.
You did it. High five for that. That's right.
Yep. I'm stubborn. So, yeah, well, you know, I did a lot of TV shows in Montreal. What I hope to do more is feature documentaries, kind of longer art form.
Right.
With more maybe characters and emotions that I can play with, come back to. Also a video game. I'm really interested in video games because they love themes. Still.
Well, and you know, the other thing is there, it's such a wide spectrum that you reach.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like part of the experience. I mean, there are people that wear these amazing headphones to play a video game. I'm like, you don't get that when you watch TV at home or, you know, when you watch a movie. It's just not the same sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's sometimes the medium creates a voice that maybe other mediums don't in a lot of ways, you know.
Exactly.
So it's awesome, and you deserve it. Like, every time I hear some of your pieces, I'm like, I feel like she should be scoring my dreams, because I'm always like running or I'm in some kind of crazy adventure, and this music would be perfect for it. So
it's so bad I didn't have the mix yet of actually I was one of the winning composers for the LA Live Score Film Festival just a few weeks ago. We had our scores performed live by the Helix Collective.
That's incredible.
At the Barnstable Theater, and it was such an experience. That was the first time that
our studio audience loves that. Yeah, big award. I love that.
Yes, that was a great thing. I think it's their fifth year that they're doing that, with winning filmmakers paired with winning composers, and that's a great experience.
That must have been awesome to hear it live.
It was. And it was a horror score. And the thing is, I don't like horror movies.
Well, you're obviously good at it.
When I got the movie, I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to watch this. And then I had so much fun, because horror scores are so incredible, actually. Because I was free to do so many things. And go wild. So I went wild with extended techniques and whistle tones and, you know, harmonics and
Well, and also just like you have like weird sliding moments strings, that, you know, yes, mm-hmm. screeches that only strings can create that. You know what I mean? So it actually, you do a lot of soundscaping when you're doing that. Exactly. Almost like your musical side and your soundscaping side collides.
Right.
Where it's not always like that, you're right?
No, you know? Exactly. And when my goal was actually just to support the, you know, the story, but also to make sure that everybody, they were nine players, that every part was fun to play,
right?
Know? And that was one of the best comments I got. It was like, oh, we had so much fun playing your score, and the conductors, you know, Phil Puffham, he was so happy, and, you know, said, oh, this is so cool to play. And so, I mean, I'm happy when musicians are happy, and when the filmmaker is happy, that's, you know, that's all good.
That's awesome. Well, let's get to another piece. What are we going to play next?
The last one, I need to change the title, apparently, because it sounds like a it's all like some kind of thing that they have, a brand. But it's called London Fog because that was the inspiration for it. And I played a lot with textures. Violin, basically, I like to combine the different voices that the violin can create. And this is kind of an anthem, I would say.
Hmm.
A foggy anthem.
I like that. A foggy anthem.
Yeah, it's more film scoring. It's more deep emotions. I don't think it's sad. I think it's foggy.
I like it. I'm going to play this, and I've got a ton of questions after this. All right. Here comes London Fog for y'all. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind that. You were just telling me when we were off the air.
Well, this is different, obviously, from the other pieces. This was more of an internal, deep feeling. I had been listening to these composers that I've discovered through my mentor, Andy Hill, and he made me listen to people like Arvo Pärt, actually, and Peter Vasks. which is the one that I had never heard of.
Yeah, never heard of.
I mean, I knew of Arvo Pärt, but Petteri Zvask is kind of in the same lineage. Johan Johansson, that I also listen to more. And I wanted to create something in that sort of vibe, but also combining a lot of the different techniques, like violin playing very emotionally, but paralleled with harmonics, which are kind of more white tone.
Right.
And I find that when I combine those two, it creates this weird, eerie feeling. It's not, it's kind of not too emotional, but it is, you know.
Well, what I love about your piece, I mean, all of your pieces felt like this, but this one especially, it's so cinematic. I mean, you just create a movie in your mind, whether you're watching something or not, just because the music takes you to a place. It takes you, it gives you the environment to just dwell in and kind of create something, you know, a saga. Or, I mean, honestly, I couldn't stop thinking about me just rowing on a raft in the middle of a foggy sky, you know? I mean, it just, it lends itself to it. So, I mean, you got a serious gift. You really do.
Thank you.
Can create something that people can really get lost in a beautiful way, and that's what most composers kind of miss. They miss the mark on that, because it's like, it can be very technical. It's
right.
It's like engineering, you right. know. It's like you can put the notes in the right place, but it's about how you play, how you phrase. It's the magic in the notes
right.
that creates the moment. You know.
I think that's also when I perform, I want to always tell the story behind the notes. I've always been like that. My goal is to create an emotion, make you laugh, make you cry. I mean, I remember I was a kid, I was six, and I would say to my aunt, I will make you cry. She would, you know, come on, you're not going to make me cry. Then I would improvise something, and she would actually cry.
That's awesome.
And, you know, that was my goal, is like, I will get you.
Right. I better be careful. You're going to make some kind of soundtrack that I'm going to just be bawling my eyes out right now. I love it.
I'll tell you in advance, so you're
prepared. So I'm ready for it.
Yes.
I'm ready for it. What's the most challenging thing, either something you had to work on, that you found was the biggest obstacle for you as a composer?
Well, sometimes, you know, when I scored for this TV show in particular, that, well, first of all, it was my first long run marathon writing, and I was getting into something I had never done before. So I really wanted to deliver on time, deliver good, deliver, you know, everything was supposed to be like the top quality. But this particular show, the challenge was that it had 6 mini stories per half-hour show, and I was scoring all of them, and they were all in very different settings, and some of them were less comfortable.
Right.
You know, because I don't come from all those backgrounds, and sometimes, you know, they were like, well, we want something that sounds like the Bee Gees. Right.
You're like, oh, that's no problem. I'll get right on that.
And, you know, we want something like Michael Jackson. Right. Or, you know, we want this big banjo piece. I'm like, yes, of course.
Like, I got it. Yeah, they all have strings. Yeah, sure, I can play that.
You know, so it was like sometimes I had 24 hours to figure it out, do something, and deliver.
Wow.
And I had never done that style. So it was, oh, my God.
Yeah, so, you know what? That makes you better, though. You know what I mean? It's like those kind of situations, you realize you can tackle that. You can tackle anything, you know.
Right.
But it's not pleasant when you're going through
No.
it.
No. And, of course, sometimes you get computer bugs, you know, happening at the same time. You have to figure that out, go on blogs, and, you know, you're still figuring out what the chords are for the Bee Gees. Like, what? Anyway.
I love that.
So, but, yes, I guess that was, in composition, that was probably one of the most challenging contracts, just because of all of these challenges at once that I was tackling and never have done that before.
I want to play, you have one more song that I want to play. This is called Bone and Prayer.
Yeah.
Tell us what this is about.
Well, actually, Prayer.
Actually, it's your last name.
Yes,
I should preface it.
But this was actually an experiment. It came out of a very dark place a few months ago, because, a heartbreaking experience. And I wanted something as a prayer. And also, I wanted to get the strings to sound like an organ. For me, it was kind of a prayer, but done with strings. So it's an experiment of sound based on an emotion that I was feeling, and I wanted to share it.
So this is for you.
So this is a prayer that I hope to share, and it actually kind of ends well, so it's okay.
That's awesome. All right, here it comes. Thank you. That was beautiful.
Well, thank you.
I like the chord at the end. Yes. You definitely resolved. You're like,
gotta be happy.
It's painful, painful, painful. I will become victorious.
There you go. I will win.
Well, let me ask you this. Where can people find you if they want to find you to have you score mm-hmm. a piece for them or work on some music for them?
Well, my website, which is www.kinemuse, so K-I-N-E-M-U-S-E, as in muse, kinemuse.com. Actually, kine comes from the German for cinema.
Hmm.
And muse is music. So,
oh, that's nice.
Kine's movement as well. So
you really thought about your website.
I did. I designed it all myself.
Wow.
As well. So.
What don't you do?
Yeah,
I mean, you're making me look lazy.
I don't sleep. That's what I don't do.
Well, that's okay. You can sleep later.
Yeah, well. And I have my SoundCloud. That's pretty easy to find with my name, Natalie. Don't forget the H.
No, spell it out. Spell it out because people are dumb anyways.
No,
that's
well,
by saying.
French,
you know?
So it's Natalie. And my last name is Bonin, B-O-N-I-N. And yes, you can find me on IMDb as well. So.
Well, you are awesome. It's been such a pleasure interviewing you. You have such a strong musical force of a career ahead of you. You don't even know it. LA is lucky to have you. And you're going to have to come back in 9 or 10 months and give us more information and more music on all the wonderful things you're working on. And we're going to collaborate.
All right.
That's
yes,
for damn
yes,
sure. You heard it right here on Wake Up Hollywood.
I've been telling her,
I'm like, we're going to collaborate. And that's that. And that's all we got to say about that.
There you go.
Well, on behalf of Eddie Pence, he'll be back next week. Don't you worry. We'll see you guys next week. Thank you guys very much.